Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Behold, it's Playboy's latest centerfold.
Holy cow.
In 3D.
This is the beautiful naked body in three dimensions, jumping out of the page into your arms.
It looks very realistic. Like, I could just touch it.
Like, I'm in a strip club. Like, she's right in front of me about to dance.
Boss, they are referring to my body in Playboy, as you well know. Although the magazine is in 3D, my article is in 4D. Welcome to the Savage Nation. There's so many news stories that I may skip them and talk only about the Playboy article for a while. Because if I start talking about the dunces who are running America and running us into the ground, you're going to get mad. If I talk about the mess in the U.S., which is very much akin to that in Greece, a nation riddled with corruption, lies, pretense, political deception, self-serving congressional leadership, and a moronic and deceptive and defensive White House, I think you'll get mad. If I talk about the fact that all U.S. public opinion polls show that 70% of the public know that the United States is still in a recession, and that more than 50% place the blame on the current White House, not on George Bush. If I talk about the fact that Obama will not give a press conference, yet he attacks the press while continuing to put out his own blogs, his own conferences, and I say we're living in a petty dictatorship, you'll get mad. If I talk about you having an arrogant sense of massive entitlement to a good life without earning it, which is killing the country, you'll get mad at me. If I say that we are the global capital of obesity, sloth, and insularity, and it reflects in our economy, you'll get mad at me. So therefore, I'm going to talk about the Playboy article. Welcome to the Savage Nation. As you know, yesterday, the internet version of the important Savage interview came out, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday in many different ways. I read from it. I asked you what you thought of my answers and the questions. Today I wrote to the interviewer a quick email, and he answered me, believe it or not, at Playboy. You ready? Here it is. From Michael Savage to the Playboy interviewer. I wanted to thank you for publishing my actual views. And as I said on yesterday's show, I was surprised to learn you hated me and even thought I hated you. The contrary is true. He sent back this note, and it's really interesting. I would have been offended if you weren't offended by something in the article. But I will say, even as an LVM, liberal vermin media person like myself, I am stunned by the reaction this piece has already gotten. So many of my supposedly liberal friends, neighbors, family members, and colleagues all came out of the closet yesterday and today to say, hey, now I don't really listen to Michael Savage, but I was listening to Savage today, and he said, blah, 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 dot, dot, dot. Very impressive. And I wrote back to him, and I said, it was the same with the Muranos in 15th century Spain, and never heard from him again. I also invited him on the show, but there's no point. You know where I stand. You know where he stands. So if you've read the internet version of the important Michael Savage interview, and you'd like to comment on it, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. Otherwise, I'm just going to read some of the questions, some of the answers, and have you comment on those, by the way. I'll start with the first one. Playboy, why are you so angry, Savage? Do I look angry? Now, I didn't cover this yesterday. What I don't understand is this. If you look at an average man from Mexico, don't they all look angry to you? Would anybody say to a Mexican-American or even a Mexican national on television talking about immigration from their perspective, would any of the liberal media say to them, Mr. Gomez, why do you look so angry? They'd be insulted. They understand that cultures have different ways of presenting themselves in public. And yet, because I don't look like a smiling dunce on Prozac who works for a General Electric, he says to me, why are you so angry? It's the way I look. It's my genetics. It's my cultural background. Then he says, well, you sound angry. Yeah, okay, there it is. See what I'm talking about? Do you want to talk about this or not? Or you want me to talk about Obama? Or do you want me to talk about children? Or do you want me to talk about something else? Or do you want me to talk about Peter Orszag? I bet you don't even know who Peter Orszag is. I bet you don't know why we're in the mess we're in. I bet you don't know that Peter Orszag is our manager of the office of management and budget, OMG. And I bet you don't know who he is and why we're in trouble. Should I give you a little background while you're calling me on the Playboy article? Peter Orszag, as you well know, is the director of Obama's Office of Management and Budget. Sure enough, our deficit is that approaching that of Greece. But you don't know his background. Who is Orszag? He is a protege of none other than Robert E. Rubin, the former Treasury Secretary, the former Goldman Sachs guy, who recently resigned from his senior position at the mismanaged and nearly bankrupt Citigroup. Now, here's the telling part. Did you know that Peter Orszag was an economic advisor for the Russian Ministry of Finance in Moscow from 92 to 93? Do you know that this was a period of financial criminality during which many Russian mineral assets came under the control of the so-called oligarchs, who then became instant billionaires? And do you know that most of these oligarchs fled Russia when their crimes were exposed and now live elsewhere? Now, Peter Orszag's most recent position before coming to serve us in the United States, you don't know this, do you, was with the economic consultancy firm which advised the Central Bank of Iceland before it went bankrupt. Now, how did Icelandic banks become so indebted? Ask our Director of Office of Management and Budget. Ask Peter Orszag. But he had the foresight to jump ship in Iceland right before the financial situation blew up like the volcano. I only mention Peter Orszag because he is typical of the Obama administration, in my humble opinion. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So I'm giving you politics, I'm giving you the personal, and I think what I'm going to do for you now while you're thinking about what you want to call and about and what you want to say, what you want to talk about, whether it's about Arizona or whether it's about the demon girl basketball coach in Illinois who won't let the girls play in Arizona. This very, very, very threatening, aggressive woman has been the center of much controversy before when she forced school children to listen to members of a radical homosexual group proselytize them. And now she's all of a sudden concerned about Arizona, which I could never understand how you put those two together. I just don't understand that. John, in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, John. What's on your mind?
Hey, you mentioned something yesterday. You said your first instinct with this Playboy reporter was you don't trust him. And then that first instinct you always should rely on. And I was wondering if you got that instinct from The New Yorker or wherever that other article where you said the guy didn't agree with you, but he wasn't so defaming to you.
Well, I thought The New Yorker article was written by a man who had some skill and someone who had a background in the literature and music, and he wrote a very fair article. I don't think this article was unfair in the sense that they let me say what I wanted to say. Yes, he couched it in saying he hated me, and he couched it in how he asked the questions. Think about this. He said he sat with me for 16 hours, and yet you're reading an article that's 9 minutes long. Now, what did he leave out? Where are the other 15 hours and 51 minutes of tapes? What did he ask that was not published that would make me look different? You know what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying, but I'm saying your first instinct, that instinct, did you get? You didn't get that with The New Yorker because this guy, you should have known because, I mean, look at the publication. I mean, they're the biggest pornographer.
Oh, yeah, no. I do understand where he was coming from. Don't get me wrong. But the thing that sold me on it was his interview with a few other people, his reporting on, admittedly, they're all to the left of center. I mean, he did Donald Trump. I don't know the guy's politics, nor is he very interesting, frankly. It's all predictable. He did George Carlin, who was a leftist big mouth, but it was fairly interesting. So I figured it couldn't be that big. But he also said to me that, look, Michael, he said, how much can I mangle your words if I'm going to quote you? You see what I'm saying?
No, yeah, he set you up.
Well, of course he set me up, but so what? At the end of the day, people are still going to read what I said, right?
No, yeah, people see through that. I mean, it looks ridiculous when someone, that whole style of journalism, you know, I'm sitting at the bar with Brando eating clams, casino, that is the worst style of journalism anyhow. It's just totally...
Well, we didn't eat clams casino. We ate sushi in my kitchen.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying, right. But when the interviewer injects himself into the interview, I think it takes an awful lot of the objectivity out of it, don't you?
It takes all of it out of it. It's just they all want to be celebrities. They all want to be celebrities, all those journalists. All those celebrity journalists, they want to be celebrities.
Well, would you rather that I appeared in 3D or that the girls appeared in 3D is the only question that's relevant today.
Well,
we'll leave it at that. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation. +1 800 449 8255, michaelsavage.com. Immigration was a big part of this interview in Playboy. And you know what's amazing to me? How illogical liberals can be. They hold themselves up as highly educated, advanced, humanistic kind of people, and they don't quite understand what they're saying. Let's take the issue of immigration. Do I have to go through this all over again? A nation is defined by laws. Illegal immigrants broke the law. They're criminals. Yet we have a government taking the side of the criminals. What does that tell you about the government? And now you have a liberal elite that does not even uphold the laws of the land. A nation is defined by borders, language, and culture. It's been true from the beginning of time. Go tell the government of China that their borders don't matter and that you want people to be freely immigrating into China from wherever. Go tell them that the languages of China are irrelevant and that some people from another nation should come in and then make their language the language of China and force the people in China to speak the other language and print ballots in their language and also make sure that everything is in bilingualism in China. And then say to the Chinese, you know, your ancient culture is all now swept under the rug. There's no reason to talk about any of the past, no Confucianism, none of the history, none of the language, none of the history, none of the arts. Sweep it under the rug and let the invaders define your nation. They certainly wouldn't agree with you. Need I tell you that? And yet, when I say it, right away he jumps to Nazi Germany. Here, Playboy. That sort of rabid nationalism can quickly lead to xenophobia, which in turn can... Well, remember what happened in the 1930s in Germany? Why are liberals obsessed with 1930s Germany? So here's what I say. Ah, bull crap. That's typical left-wing horse crap. I don't even understand what they're talking about. What? I'm Hitler because I'm against illegal immigration? That makes me a racist? I would say the racists are the people who come into a country that isn't theirs and take it over and tell me I should speak their language. You go to a sporting event and they're waving the Mexican flag, not an American flag. What if my grandfather had waved the Russian flag? They would have killed him. Now, can anyone disagree with me on this? What logic do you have to take the side of people who've come in and are trashing your nation and don't even respect your nation? I say it to you here. And I said it to them there, and I'll say it over and over again until more Americans come to understand they're losing their country. Now, I want to put everything in context by going back to a New Yorker podcast piece on Michael Savage that was done where Kalefa Sena profiled the talk show host Michael Savage. I want you to listen to the difference in tone in clip one.
Michael Savage is one of the most popular conservative talk radio hosts in the country. His show, The Savage Nation, reaches more than 8 million listeners each week.
We so-called conservatives are actually the liberals of America. And the so-called liberals are the actual fascists of America.
Savage's disdain for the left is savage. One of his many books is called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. But listeners to his show get a lot more than politics, as Kalefa Sena tells us in his profile this week. Welcome back, Kay.
Thanks.
So the election of Barack Obama has put conservatives back in the opposition, and that has re-energized talk radio. Is that what got you interested in doing this piece? And why did you pick Michael Savage of all the conservative talk show hosts?
That's part of what got me interested in doing this piece. I'd heard him over the years and found myself listening to him a bunch last year during the election. And he was interesting partly because he seemed to be so off message.
Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong you're on the wrong dial position.
Savage, despite being identified as a conservative talk show host, didn't really seem to like McCain that much.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely hated Obama. Didn't really like Bush.
So he was reacting really differently than the other conservative hosts.
Well, you know, most of the other conservative hosts, no matter what the problems they might have had with McCain, mm-hmm. were they certainly supported him.
Right.
And Savage really didn't. But Savage has always been a really kind of unusual, weird guy. His mm-hmm. radio show isn't like anyone else's radio show.
Right. So he talks a lot less about politics than a lot of other talk show hosts do.
Well, he's a lot less single-minded. He has this weird cluster of interests. He's mm-hmm. interested in herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. He's interested in animals. He loves food. He loves to tell stories about, you know, New York in the 50s and 60s. And he loves to talk about his life in a really unusual way. He has this kind of melancholy, depressive streak. And,
mm-hmm.
and so the takeaway isn't necessarily, you know, we're going to rally the troops and we're going to get this done politically. The takeaway is often, I'm probably going to go home and drink tonight. And, and that makes him a really interesting, really compelling character on the radio. Mm-hmm.
When the New Yorker comes up on a show like Savage's or Rush's, it's generally not in glowing terms.
No.
Michael Savage is, my guess, not a longtime subscriber to the magazine.
Well, he is a longtime reader.
He is.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean,
okay.
He grew up in New York and he has said he did grow up reading it.
So how hard was it to get him to talk to you and how did you go about that?
Well, basically I sent a bunch of emails to his people.
Incredible. Stop. You're listening to a New Yorker podcast piece on me after the article came out in 2009 on Michael Savage in the New Yorker. And I want you to listen to, you see, the reason I want you to hear it is that I want you to hear the interviewer's mind, how flexible it was, how open-minded it was, how he really understood who I was before he started the interview. And then I want to juxtapose that with the Playboy interviewer who came in with an axe to grind and grudgingly try to grind the axe on my own head. The problem for him is that he was unable to do it because I wasn't the person he thought I was. So I'll let you decide which is the better interview right here on the Savage Nation when I come back on your local affiliate.
Savage.
Character on the radio.
Mm-hmm. When the New Yorker comes up on a show like Savage's or Rush's, it's generally not in glowing terms.
No.
Michael Savage is, my guess, not a longtime subscriber to the magazine.
Well, he is a longtime reader.
He is.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean,
okay.
He grew up in New York and he has said he did grow up reading it.
So how hard was it to get him to talk to you and how did you go about that?
Well, basically I sent a bunch of emails to his people and finally got an email back from him. He
mm-hmm.
writes, all the emails I've ever gotten from him, I think, have been in all caps. And he was kind of like, what do you want? And so I kind of explained to him that I wanted to write a story about him, that I listened to his show, that I enjoyed his show. I think every email I wrote him, he read on the air.
Wow.
And so it was this weird kind of three-way conversation where I'd write him again in response to the discussion that I'd heard on the air. It was pretty strange. I think we have a clip of him describing one of the emails he sent back to me after I had written him asking him to please talk to me.
So I sent him this note and I said, the cartoon that goes with the story, will it show me in the Gestapo or an SA uniform? Surely you don't believe I don't know what you want to try to make of me. Why must everyone in journalism be so obvious? Why must all of you in the extreme media paint everyone you disagree with as demonic?
No, in fact, when I read your piece, I didn't think he came off as demonic at all.
When I actually finally kind of convinced him that, you know, we should sit down and talk and it wasn't going to destroy his career, you know, it was this kind of surreal thing because we had a great time and,
mm-hmm.
we had some beers and we sat on his porch and
mm-hmm.
he's a great host
mm-hmm.
and he was fun to talk to. I'd like to think he enjoyed the conversation and I think there's something about him that – some part of him that thought it was really funny. On the radio the next day after the interview, one of the callers asked how it went,
right.
And he described me as looking a little bit like Obama, which which coming from him, I think, was a deeply twisted kind of compliment.
We're not going to play extended clips of him on this podcast, but it sounds like from your piece, part of what's interesting is kind of where he goes in the extended form.
One of the things Michael Savage does better than just about anyone is he really exploits the medium of radio and the fact that his show is happening in real time and that you're hearing his thought process in real time. One of my favorite segments ever came when, you know, he was doing a show and during the break, someone sent him an envelope with a photograph of his father who died many decades ago. And this threw Michael Savage off completely. It was amazing to hear those things kind of battling in his head, to hear him sort of trying to stay on topic, but getting thrown off topic by this picture in his hands.
Isn't it interesting how they love Islam? They can't get enough of it. They're experts in the Sunni sect, the Shia sect. Now you see, I'm what do you call it when you talk and talk and he looked good. Look at this. I can't get it out of my head. I shouldn't have looked at these pictures. He was, God bless him. A lot of good did him, the wife. Black hair, thin, kept in shape, and dead.
So, you know, it's funny, but there's a real, you know, there's a real sense of loss and melancholy there, too. And there's something about the way he kind of lays himself bare on the radio that's, to me at least, riveting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't think of another political show where someone is so personal about their life.
Yeah, and so willing to go.
Well, Aaron, so you're listening to an incredible discussion that was done then. Now, I want to show you something. That was the New Yorker talking about the interview they did with me, openly running a podcast about it. Now, this just came out minutes ago regarding the Playboy interview. I'm giving you something in real time. Here's a headline from Ed Walsh of TheExaminer.com. Here's the headline. You're hearing it first in the Savage Nation. I want you to compare now Playboy to New Yorker. Playboy magazine mum over radio show host Michael Savage slamming interview article. Dateline San Francisco. Conservative talk show host Michael Savage is slamming Playboy magazine over a published interview with him that will run in the magazine's June issue. Savage spoke out about the article shortly after it first appeared online on Wednesday, May 12th. Savage blasted writer David Hockman for writing the following to start of his article, quote, "I can't remember a more difficult interview. Savage was a fine host, but his opinions are extreme to the point of being poison. Much of the time I hated him. He's maddeningly bullheaded and close-minded, but he was just as leery of me. Even when we were laughing, I knew he was thinking liberal vermin media," close quote. Savage told his listeners on Wednesday that he had no negative feelings toward Hockman during the interview and that he only thought less of him after he first read the story online. Hockman wrote that he had spent 16 hours interviewing Savage. The radio host told listeners that at one point during their lengthy conversation, Hockman asked if he could take a cell phone photograph of him because his mother is a big fan. Savage told his listeners that if Hockman's mother was listening, she wouldn't be happy with her son. Savage told his listeners that Hockman never hinted that he disliked Savage during the interview. Savage said, "Why did the guy say he hated me when he wouldn't say it to my face?" Savage told his listeners that if Hockman had interviewed Iran President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad or Saddam Hussein, he wouldn't have started his article by saying that he hated either man. Quote, "I am sure that if Playboy sat down with Ahmadinejad, they would kiss his hands," Savage said. Savage suggested that Hockman wrote what he did to preserve his cred with fellow lib journalists. The talk show said that he reluctantly agreed to do the Playboy interview with Hockman based on the past celebrity interviews the writer conducted with celebrities such as George Carlin and Donald Trump. Savage posted a criticism of the Playboy article from a psychiatrist friend of his on his website, michaelsavage.com. The friend wrote in part, "Congratulations on taking the challenge of interview by an obviously exploitive Playboy. Obvious in that they are using your ratings to lift their ratings. It seems they are shifting to media violence, an attack on an iconic figure, that's you, brother, as a successor to exploitation of good-looking, sexy women, which is no longer their exclusive gambit," close quote. I thought that was ingenious. Listen to this. Here's the punchline. It's from the SF Examiner. The Examiner just came out by Ed Walsh. Just hold on now. Okay. "When asked for a reaction to the criticism, Hockman told this reporter that protocol required that questions go through Playboy. On Thursday, May 13th, Playboy Enterprises publicist Liz Sablich wrote the following in an email to this reporter, quote, 'Thank you for writing, but unfortunately I cannot supply a comment,' close quote. In turn, TheExaminer.com wrote the following to Sablich. 'Thank you. Is Playboy prohibiting the writer from responding directly to questions about the article as well?' Close quote. Sablich responded, 'Any official statement regarding a magazine feature must come from a Playboy representative,' close quote. I want you to understand what's happened in the United States of America. When I defined the government media complex, I was absolutely ingenious because not only has Obama stopped giving press conferences, magazines are no longer responding to the press. We are living in a closing circle. The government media complex is increasingly becoming like Izvestia or Pravda of the ex-Soviet Union. And the reason I'm telling you this is that we're all going to suffer as a result. That's what I think. That's what I think. So play a little Gillespie for me, and let me calm down. I was in a doctor's office today. I don't even want to tell you what this was now. This is funny. It's like a prognosis on the air. You're watching a man go downhill little by little. One of my favorite pieces, A Night in Tunisia, Dizzy Gillespie. Or is it Gillespie? Pardon me. I come from South 14th Street. We said Gillespie. You say Gillespie. Picture what this sounded like to a kid riding a subway to a job in the Department of Welfare. On Friday night, you smoke a little pot, you listen to music like this. Could you imagine how it opened up your mind? How it blew you away? Au fait? Those days are gone. Is there jazz anymore? I mean, there are jazz players, but no one can do this. A certain mindset, a certain time. So here we are, sitting together. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Give him some cotton swabs and I'll see him in the casino. 2010, here we are sitting together watching America go to you-know-where in a handbasket. The result not only of Obama but his predecessor. Bush gave us a $1 trillion deficit. I was the one who called him a fiscal socialist. You laughed at me. Now Obama, the great savior, has made it a $4 trillion deficit in a year and a half, and you don't notice what's going on. And the media continues to come after me like the banshees that they are, but it's very hard to destroy a man who's actually allowed to speak. That's the whole point of free speech. In other words, you could hate a guy, and you could try to categorize or typecast a person, but if you actually let the man speak, then the people decide for themselves what they think of him. That's speech. That's freedom of speech. That's the whole story in a nutshell. I don't care that Playboy hates me. I really don't care whether they like me or hate me. They gave me a podium. Admittedly, it's not that large an audience, but it's a different audience. You understand what I'm saying? Now, I got to go back to something else. I want to start this. This is very important for your education. I have a brilliant friend. He's a psychiatrist. I haven't seen him in years. He was once, we were once much closer when we were together in the nutrition movement. We used to do, everything together. This guy is a true pioneer in the use of nutritional medicine. He is probably the last living great man in the history of nutritional medicine. He has a real medical degree from a great university. I don't want to give you any more details about him. He's also a psychiatrist, and he's a real pioneer, and he's a genius. But you never heard of him. He never became as public as Pauling for various reasons, but he knows everything there is to know about nutrition and medicine. And many doctors could learn a lot from him, but they would probably shun him the same way I am shunned in political circles, because we're too far ahead of our time. And we really, in a way, it's like Lilliputians look at people who are not Lilliputians and they try to diminish you. They put strings around people who are not Lilliputians. So he's a gargantuan in the nutrition field, so you never heard of him. Dear Savage, congratulations on taking the challenge of interview by an obviously exploited playboy. Obvious in that they are using your ratings to lift their ratings. Now, this is incredible. It seems they are shifting to media violence, an attack on an iconic figure, that's you, brother, as a successor to exploitation of good-looking, sexy women, which is no longer their exclusive gambit. Exploitation, either way, are mostly of the immature audience that buys into a view of the Playboy world through the lens of Playboy's cameras and journalists. But the main theme is obviously exploitation. The same was evident on the Charles Barkley video shown on the Playboy website when you did it way back on CNN. Obviously, they set you up for a sporting match with Charles Barkley, and when you came out swinging back after he insulted you, they cut you off and put you down. But you won. I am puzzled, however, about the British government's unfair and illegal, in my opinion, invasion of your rights without a hearing or an opportunity to be heard, other than by means of your own considerable popularity and the rebuttal power of your radio and literary podium. Again, Savage, you win, but only in the minds of people who have gotten beyond racism and into realism. Now listen to this insight. Know thine enemy ought to be the first rule of survival in the modern world, just as it has always been. You are the sage voice of such common sense. Your error in the popular mind is that you also attempt to define the natural feelings that sane people have about enemies and the logical thoughts and actions that one takes, defensive and strategic. You voice these advanced but logical thoughts and are vilified and insulted for your candor. You're also misrepresented and slandered by those who fear your influence. Such people are indeed the enemy, both those who support Islamic fascism in the form of nihilistic imperialism and such people within America, i.e. the enemy within. These are not just liberals, they are dreamers and risk all utopianists. They are not only nuts, they are also stupid. They are sowing the seeds of their own economic downfall and eventual physical enslavement and threaten to take us all down with them. You know that, and you voiced that message, but perhaps not clearly enough to get the laggards to wake up. He goes on and he says, Michael, continue to do a phenomenal job and a courageous one of getting lackadaisical and somewhat grandiose Americans to think new thoughts. You have won many followers, and you have challenged even the Playboy crowd to pay attention to reality. Not an easy task, as you have so often noted. Could you play a little of the other jazz we pulled for the day here on the Savage Nation? We'll take a quick break together. You got any of the Take 5 stuff? Not. Okay. Don't you have the new stuff? Must we go back again before the break? Can you give me a piece of new stuff? You know, I have a pain in my arm that I had to get an EKG today. Luckily, it wasn't a heart attack. There's a pinched nerve in my neck. Why a pinched nerve in my neck? I've been healthy all my life. Why now? Stress. Finished the book. Playboy article. Personal problems. S happens to people. Here today, gone tomorrow. I know someone who had to go to a high school today for grief counseling. A 16-year-old died of a heart attack at the desk, not even playing sports. Then I know someone at the grief counseling at the CHP. Our heart goes out to their family. A motorcycle cop with much experience cut off by a dumb old woman. Hit the car. His arm is hanging. His life is hanging. He's hanging. You're hanging. We're hanging. All aboard. I'll be back. Is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449, whatever, I forgot, 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. A little goofy today after a long, long day's journey and tonight. It's me and Teddy alone in the studio. You're out there listening to the Savage Nation. You don't want to hear me complaining, I know that. I don't know how much more I want to talk about Playboy or the New Yorker, but I'll tell you the truth, listening to the podcast from the New Yorker from a year ago, really just was like listening to a piece of music. The difference, you know, I mean, there are writers, then there are journalists, then there are artists, then there are literary geniuses. I mean, it's a whole spectrum, but, you know, you got to take what you can get. Look, can I name the group? No, there's a Major League interviewer who's been after me for over a year since the ban of Britain, who has been wanting to do a Major League, you know, I can't even remember the name of it, TV thing. I won't do it. It's funny. I sat down with the New Yorker, I sat down with Playboy, but I will not sit down with a TV interviewer. And it's very simple. Simple why? The Playboy guy, although he hated me by his own admission and abhors my politics, he did promise me and he did permit me to speak my mind without editing me. Hey, you're telling me that some guy who has a major league show on ABC, CBS, or NBC is going to take my statements and not cut them up? I don't believe it. So in other words, they want to do an interview with me. It has to be done where it's fair. In other words, you ask me a question, you're going to run my whole answer. You're not going to cut it up and paste it and then show a picture of Goebbels. You know what I'm saying? And that's what TV specializes in. So I haven't fallen for it. Don't think I'm that naive when it comes to people. On the other hand, I was fooled by this guy. I thought that he was having a good time, and I never hated him, although he thought I did. So that's that. I mean, I don't want to, you know, dwell on it. It's good show topic. It's good radio. It's a good thing to talk about because we all need a break from Obama. We all need a break from what's going on with Kagan. And I have covered that pretty heavily Monday, Tuesday. I'll do it again. We know Kagan's unqualified. We know she's an extremist. We know she's anti-gun. We know she's anti-the First Amendment. We know that Obama is an extremist just like her. What would you expect an extremist like Obama, who became what he is through affirmative action, to be picking? Do you expect him to pick a fair-minded person of quality, or do you expect him to pick another person pushed through the system because of affirmative action? I mean, what do you expect? Kevin in New York, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks. Dr. Savage, I want to agree with you. You mentioned earlier about what you said about your outward appearance, supposedly appearing angry to other people. You mentioned culture, background, genetics being a reason. I completely agree. I'm very similar to you. My parents are immigrants. I'm from New York. My parents are from Europe, Ireland to be exact. And like you, I didn't grow up with the lovey-dovey hugs and I love you every other second. And I think it reflects. I get people all the time calling me, hey, why are you so angry? Smile. And I give an answer like you just said. I said, you want me going around smiling all day, looking like a lunatic for no reason? I mean, like I'm on Prozac. That's not what I'm going to do.
What country are you from originally?
My parents are from Ireland.
Yeah, but you don't walk around smiling like a moron, right?
No, of course not. I mean,
Well, that's what I'm saying. What does he say to me? Why are you angry? I said, what do you mean am I angry? I'm sitting and looking at the guy at my kitchen table. I wasn't scowling. What I'm saying is it's a cultural thing. It's how I look. There was a time in my life that I tried to look like an American. I actually walked around and said, now, wait a minute. Why do men walk around here smiling? I don't understand. Even though I'm born here. I don't understand why men walk around smiling. I don't understand what they're smiling about. Do you?
I agree. And I just wanted to tell you.
You know what life is? Life is you and your wife pulling a sled on the ice, raising two children, and fending off marauders. That's life. That's life, my friends.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Behold, it's Playboy's latest centerfold.
Holy cow.
In 3D.
This is the beautiful naked body in three dimensions, jumping out of the page into your arms.
It looks very realistic. Like, I could just touch it.
Like, I'm in a strip club. Like, she's right in front of me about to dance.
All right, this is Michael Savage in 4D coming to you out of your radio speaker. And we're talking about the news. We're talking about the extremist president. The extremist president who will not give a press conference. The extremist president who has alienated even the liberal press is starting to buzz about the fact that he's becoming like a mini dictator. Who attacks free speech, who attacks the freedom of the press, yet puts out his own press, so to speak, through twittering and this and that, along the lines of Hugo Chavez. This is Welcome to the New World Order, which is simply dictatorial order when you think about it. And we're talking about his attempts to foist an unqualified extremist on the Supreme Court, who is against the Second Amendment, who is against the First Amendment, who seems to be against the American people, but is being hosted by the undertakers of the Republican Party as though she's something special. She's not a Felix Frankfurter, let me tell you. She's more like Phyllis Hamburger. Welcome to the Savage Nation, which I think I've said. You want me to talk about this? You want me to talk about that? You want me to talk about... I'm going to read from a few other things. I also want to direct you to theexaminer.com, Ed Walsh, article, which came out in the last hour. Playboy magazine mum over radio show host Michael Savage slamming interview article. It's very, very comprehensive. I'm going to link it up on michaelsavage.com if you missed it. And now I want to go back to something else. Last year in 09, I was interviewed by the liberal New Yorker, and I played you a podcast of what they ran after the interview. I'm now going to play you a continuation of that podcast for a reason. I want you to hear the depth of the New Yorker interviewer, and I want you to compare that with the, I think, monodimensionality of the interviewer of Playboy. Listen to part two.
He doesn't like Obama. He didn't like McCain. He doesn't like Rush Limbaugh. What would you describe his politics as? How would you boil it down? Hates everything? Or?
Well, no. He's a, he calls himself a genuine independent conservative. And, mm-hmm. Borders, language, and culture is one of his rallying cries. And mm-hmm. so he believes strongly that illegal immigration is hurting America in all sorts of ways. Right. He worked in a clinic that served gay men in San Francisco in the early mid 1980s, just as the AIDS epidemic was hitting. And, as he tells it, he called for closing down the bathhouses, which got him sort of exiled from this community that he had sort of been part of.
Well, liberals who called for that, too, were also really attacked. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of traces his disillusionment with the gay rights movement to that mm-hmm. moment. So he's a very vociferous critic of the gay rights movement. Mm-hmm. He's said a lot of things about terrorism, about Muslim terrorism, and about Islam itself mm-hmm. that have caused a lot of offense to Muslim groups. So those are issues that he takes, a position that could be described as kind of an amped up version of the conservative gospel.
So I can't imagine Glenn Beck 20 years ago volunteering in a AIDS hospice or something like that. Well, how do you get from working with people with AIDS to being a conservative talk show host? What is his sort of career path?
Well, that's so interesting. There's been, a lot of articles that have run about him do almost like an expose, as if he had this past that he was hiding. Actually, in a lot of ways, he's really proud of his past. He, went to Queens College, then he moved out west. He befriended Ginsburg and Ferlinghetti and a bunch of beatniks. He lived in Hawaii. He did botanical research in Fiji and eventually got a PhD from UC Berkeley, which is funny enough.
Wow.
And yeah, he was an herbalist, and he wrote a whole string of books about natural healing. But he got disillusioned by a couple of things. One of them was AIDS and his disillusionment with the gay rights world. Another was that he says that affirmative action stymied his academic career, and he couldn't mm-hmm. get a tenure track job because he was a white male.
The conservatives of today, like me, those who believe in individual liberty are actually a continuum of the liberal movement of the 1960s, only we didn't go off the rail and become Marxists.
So, and there is this, it's partly social, I get the feeling too. I get the feeling that it's partially living in the Bay Area, living among the beats, living in North Beach. He kind of came to feel that he wasn't part of this world, or that he didn't want to be part of this world, and that it was partly a personal reaction to what he saw around him.
It's funny because when you talk about his life, I think of someone like Norman Podhoretz or Irving mm-hmm. Kristol, mm-hmm. who had this sort of...
Or David Horowitz.
Right. And so he seems to follow the path of quite a few neoconservatives.
Right. In the crudest possible term, I think one of the big differences with Michael Savage is that he stayed weird. and there's a countercultural feeling to his radio show even now.
He was raised Jewish in mm-hmm. New York. How important is his Jewish upbringing in his current... I mean, you hear it in his voice.
You hear it in his voice. He's kept that the cultural Jewish identity he's mm-hmm. kept very strongly. But spiritually, he talks about himself in a complicated way, kind of as a strong believer in the Bible mm-hmm. and in Judeo-Christian values mm-hmm. and sort of in God, but not necessarily in a straightforward way.
Let's say there's reincarnation. I'm trying to use logic here. I know it doesn't work, though. I've tried it 1,000 times. So there's nothing left but alcohol at that point. Let's say there's reincarnation. What's the good of it if you don't know it?
Part of his kind of countercultural identity and an interesting hangover from his days as a beat and his time on North Beach, that he's still a lot of these ideas of reincarnation and these Buddhist ideas are still something that he's fascinated by and often kind of teases them out and kind of wrestles with them on the air, which mm-hmm. is, yet another thing that makes him different from your average political pundit.
He also, you write in your piece, he also is sort of obsessed with his own health. And why is he so worried about that?
I mean, He talks about death, I would say, a few times an hour, you know, for right. 2 or 3 hours a day, every day. He has an incredibly morbid sensibility, and in a way that is – there's an interesting tension between that and his political beliefs, because mm-hmm. part of him wants to say, you know, America's going down the tubes right. because of Obama, because of, you know, Sotomayor and whoever else, and we've got to put a stop to this and save our country. And there's part of him that says, I'm going to die. We're all going to die. It doesn't matter. We're all doomed. and part of the fun of listening to his show is hearing those two impulses fight it out.
That's why we're focused on politics, to make believe that we don't care about the eternal questions. This way we can get mad at the Republicans or Nixon. You can say Nixon did it. Or you can hate the Democrats that they did it. You don't have to face your own problem. You understand this? You want to talk about everything. You know, I'm going to talk about the economy again. What? Who do you think I am, Sean Hannity?
So when this piece comes out, who do you think you're going to get a harder time from? The Savage fans or the people who assume you're going to do a hit job on him and are like, wait, you're actually kind of a fan also. Your liberal friends.
I wouldn't want to presuppose anyone's reaction to this, but I'll certainly be listening to Michael Savage this week to see what he has to say.
All right. Well, Kay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I got to tell you, listening to that podcast a year later, nobody has gotten me better than Kay Senfa of The New Yorker. And that's a product of his education and his background as a music critic for the New York Times. And that's what I'm trying to say to you. You got to be careful who you sit down with, because who you sit down with is how it's going to come out to a certain extent. I'm sure he disagrees with my politics to a great extent, but he didn't let his personal beliefs interfere with his portrait of Michael Savage. Moreover, he had insights that are very important for you, the listener of this show. Without blowing my horn over and over again, and you're bored and you want me to go on with the banking and this and that, you got to understand that this show is also about the portrait of the talk show host as a young man. In other words, who is behind the paint? Who's moving the brush? You go to a gallery, you look at a painting. Wonderful, I want to buy that painting, or I hate that painting. Don't you sometimes want to know who the painter is? Don't you want to meet the painter? Well, you just met the painter of words. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the unbiased opinions of Michael Savage. Here's a new article just came out. Cougars die young, sugar daddies live longer. I may as well become salacious. It's the only thing that works. Cougars beware. Having a boy toy husband increases a woman's chances of an early death, according to a German study. And the younger her spouse is, the harder it is on the woman's health, researchers found. So pay attention, old ladies. However, the trend is reversed when an older man opts for a younger woman. The more youthful his wife, the longer the husband is expected to live. This finding will come as a blow to the growing numbers of cougars, defined as middle-aged women who shun older men in search of younger guys. And they talk about Demi Moore, 47, is 15 years older than her husband Ashton Kutcher, whoever he is. And they analyze it. There it is. A woman who bags a man 7 to 9 years younger than her is 20% more likely to die than someone married to a man her own age. And when a cougar weds someone more than 15 years younger than her, the risk soars to more than 30%. The greater the age difference, the lower the wife's life expectancy, said whatever from Germany. The best choice for a woman is to marry a man of exactly the same age. A sugar daddy, though, with a wife 7 to 9 years as junior, girls pay attention, a sugar daddy with a wife 7 to 9 years as junior is 7% less likely to die early. Probably because she's more likely to nurse him in old age. And by contrast, the younger man tends to be less inclined to look after his elderly wife. Well, this is an interesting article. I don't think it means a damn thing, but it's typical of the news today. So I thought I'd give you something typical of the news today. Because I don't think you're interested in the Supreme Court. I don't think you're interested in Obama and Marxism and Leninism and Trotsky and... I can bring up some really obscure characters in the Soviet Union going back to the 1910 to 1917 period, if you'd like. I can't assure you that all of them are ancestors of Kagan and Obama, but I'm sure that if we searched the genealogical records, we could probably make some connections there. Senator Harry Reid meets with Kagan. Oh, the most disgusting one is Orrin Hatch, the Republican undertaker. meeting Kagan and touching an old gun. You won't believe this. You know, it was Orrin Hatch, by the way, who gave us Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Here's Orrin Hatch doing it again. If Ronald Reagan were alive, you know what he'd say? There he goes again. Clip six.
You're going to get mad. There's the man of the year from the American Rifle, National Rifle Association. So it's a piece of art, really.
It's beautiful.
It's a handmade flintlock, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
She loves it, Kagan. She would hope that all guns could be made into flintlocks. Then they'd all be gorgeous. Then they'd be accepted in Katz's Delicatessen while buying a corned beef on Club. You know, those flintlocks I like that the rednecks have, they don't bother me as much as these autos. Something about the autos scare me, but the flintlocks, I don't know I could live with them, truthfully. I'll tell you the truth. The flintlocks don't really bother me. You know, Orrin Hatch is a flintlock of a senator. That's all I can say. That's all. So what do you want to talk about here on this? You want me to read more from the article and comment on it? You want me to do the news? You want me to take a call? Bob in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Savage. I want to make the point that I think that it's extremely important for you to speak to places like Playboy, for all of us to engage the liberal media for its own sake.
I have no choice since the conservative media won't touch me. I'd rather go to the liberal media. I mean, at least they're reaching out to me. Irrespective of the fact that they hate me, at least they'll hear me out. I can't say the same for Fox News, can I?
But I want to give you a reason why I'm making this point. And I would like to draw a parallel between prayer and the fact that we have to maintain our freedom of speech.
Oh, this is so long. I don't know what you're saying. Could you make it shorter?
I'll make it really short.
Go ahead. Really short. I mean, so short that it should be over already. Go ahead. I'm going to hang up. I can't. I have a pain in my arm I've been dealing with for 2 weeks. And now I have no feeling in my left. I know people are going to get scared. No, my left hand is cold. I had to get gloves. But don't worry about me. I'm not dying. It's just some kind of neuropathy, probably related to a pinched nerve in my neck from leaning over the microphone for 16 years. See, nothing really changes. My poor grandfather was a tailor, a humble immigrant tailor, and he leaned over a treadle all of his life, and he died at 47. I, thank God, I've been leaning over a microphone for 16 years. What's the difference between leaning over a sewing machine and leaning over a microphone at the end of the day? You're still knitting something, right? I'm knitting ideas. God bless him. He was knitting custom-made suits. This pays a little better, I got to tell you the truth. Plus, you can do it in your pajamas. I mean, that is a difference. Richard, San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Richard?
Thanks, Michael. I've been listening to you over 15 years, and I read the online article for free, and I think I figured that the reason why the editors attacked you, like, after the interview ran was because the interviewer went through most of the discredited leftist George Soros smears against you, which not only you demolished, but even the New Yorker article said were greatly exaggerated, and the interviewer became frustrated, and to be politically correct, he had to attack you and at least claim to hate you in your analysis just to be politically correct.
Yeah, that's what I think. I don't doubt what you're saying to be true, and I have no misgivings toward the guy. In fact, I sent him a note today thanking him for at least running what I said in there. Each statement was run in its entirety. They didn't cut it. They were true to their word, Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you. See, people listen, even if it's in San Francisco after a ball game. They do listen once in a while. Going back again to the angry thing. I mean, I can go into the politics, but why do American men walk around with a smile? I still don't understand that. I tried once to look American. I remember as an immigrant son, I was always insecure about how my face looked. It was always a little different because the men that I grew up around were all poor immigrants and they didn't walk around with a fixed smile. And I couldn't understand the kind of wealthier people from Westchester with golf clubs in their trunk, with wives who cheated on them, who were drunk all the time, always smiled. And I couldn't understand why waspy men whose wives cheated on them and who were drunk all the time would be smiling. I tried to put two and two together, and I couldn't figure that one out. But anyway, I never did figure that one out. I'll be right back.
Savage. We'll be right back.
We have to flat out understand the discourse. The discourse in this legislation mirrors the legislation or mirrors the discourse of Nazi Germany. All we are trying to do here is create
fear. All
right,
this was astounding. There was a CNN debate today on the Arizona immigration laws, and the Arizona state put out a new law banning ethnic studies. And that was because ethnic studies had become La Raza studies, which had information that teaches students that the USA was once Mexico and to rise up and to take it back. And Arizona stood up and said, enough is enough. Now, I got to tell you, before we have a wonderful guest on, Attorney General Electric Eric Holder, I just put something together. Attorney General Electric Eric Holder admits to not reading Arizona's immigration law despite criticizing it. This is the problem with what's going on in this country. Attorney General Electric Eric Holder admits to not reading Arizona's immigration law, even though he criticizes it. You got a guy in ethnic studies in Arizona who calls it Nazi Germany now, even though he doesn't know what Nazi means, nor what Nazi Germany was, and they're hysterical. And yet there was a woman I saw today on CNN who made great sense to me, Margaret Dugan, Garcia Dugan, by the way, who is the Arizona Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. She made great sense to me, and I'm a former teacher. Ms. Dugan, it's a pleasure to have you on the Savage Nation. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, okay, the other guy was saying it's Nazi Germany for simply ending ethnic studies. How did he get there?
Good question. He got there because he was the probably founder of Raza Studies, and he wants it to remain.
Let's say you are saying teach ethnic pride, teach the history of Mexico within American studies, right? Isn't that what you were saying?
Sure, you give a balance, but why do you have to separate a whole course and call it Raza Studies instead of really incorporating part of what happened through American history?
Margaret Dugan, I have a question for you. You are of Hispanic background originally, correct?
I am, yes, and okay. I'm native Arizona.
So I want to ask a question as an American who is not of Hispanic background. The name La Raza itself means the race. Do you have any idea how it sounds to people who know what that means in Spanish?
I think it sounds very racist to me.
Well, I don't understand. When they say Raza studies, that means race studies, right? That is about as eerily Third Reich as anything I've ever heard.
It sounds that way to me, too. And it sounds to me that if you don't belong to that ethnicity, you shouldn't take that class. And that's what I was trying to tell Dr. Romero, is that no student would take that class unless they were of Hispanic descent. And he keeps saying, well, any student can take this class. Well, no one is.
Because they're afraid to take it. You're the Arizona Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. Did the state outlaw ethnic studies? Is that law now?
This is law. It was House Bill 2281. Any class that teaches ethnic solidarity as opposed to teaching students that they're of individuals, or teaching a class that teaches resentment of a race or a class of people, or is designed primarily for a specific group of students of ethnicity, or segregate students, or teaches to overthrow our U.S. government, is going to be prohibited from being a course on a high school campus.
How in the world has Arizona become at the forefront of civil rights and civil liberties and sanity in America? It's amazing to me that Arizona is the new California. There was a time when California led the way. Now California is considered the Argentina of America, economically, culturally, socially, and politically. It seems that Arizona, because it's taken the brunt of the illegal aliens, has literally decided to survive and is fighting back, which is why most of the people in America who support the rule of law support Arizona. You and I both know that there are states and cities declaring politically they're going to boycott Arizona and all. But truthfully, I think you're going to wind up getting people coming to Arizona now who might not have planned a trip to Arizona just to show their solidarity with the courage and sense of your state.
Well, I think we're just trying to let people know that we do like the rule of law, and what I'm doing is wanting to have all children be treated equally, not in any segregated classroom. And a student of when I went to school, I was treated as an individual, not from a certain ethnicity or nationality. And that's what I am trying to do for all of our students in Arizona. We are out of many one instead of what Augustine Romero is trying to do is segregate these students and teach them that they're victims and they're oppressed. And that's what they're doing, and trying to teach them that this is Mexico and to rise up and take it back. That is.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely absurd. And I know it's going on, but that Arizona had the political will to fight against these separatists is amazing to me. There was something Romero said that I couldn't follow. He says World War II and Mexican involvement. What was he implying there?
That I do not know. The only thing that the loss of Aztlan in 1848, but that wasn't World War II, but I don't know exactly.
I didn't know what he was saying. He was trying to imply something, and I couldn't follow him. But when he ended by saying that the legislation that you have passed in Arizona mirrors legislation of Nazi Germany, just shows how ignorant this man really was. And I thought I'd had to have you on the show because you are the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. So does that mean that ethnic studies courses are now gone? They're gone completely?
I am running. I am running for the superintendent in 2010.
I see. But I mean, are ethnic studies courses now gone in Arizona? When does that take effect?
They will take effect December 31st.
So that means all of the propaganda is gone from the schools. All of the teachers who had these little cushy jobs are gone as well?
Well, if they fit any of the criteria that I just mentioned to you, these studies cannot be taught in our public schools. If they have any criteria that resembles any of the statements that I read to you, they cannot be taught in our public schools.
Well, all I can say is Arizona is the new California. You're leading the way in common sense. And it's very courageous of you to have taken this position. Margaret Dugan, Arizona Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, thank you very much for common sense and for being on the Savage Nation. I truly appreciate it. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to me, and I'm talking about the Playboy interview, the New Yorker interview, the news of the day, including Arizona. If you'd like to comment, just give us a call. Debbie in Fort Lauderdale, thanks for holding. You're next up. Go ahead, please. Debbie, what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say you're not a wasp. Your eyes are twinged with wisdom and sadness. You have sorrow for the way this world has turned out, and you come from a Russian background. I mean, your eyes, I looked at you on the internet, reflect the sorrow. I think of you say, like, what happened to the world? What's going on?
That's interesting. So you have pathos, and you see my pathos, correct?
Well, I do, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading you wrong.
Well, how do you look at the world? Do you walk around with a fixed smile on your face?
I'm not a Pollyanna. I'm not a slap happy person. I'm sorry.
No, but you're in Fort Lauderdale, where there's a lot of ex-New Yorkers to start with. Is there a general attitude of happy, I'm glad I'm living in the sun, with people smiling down there? Or is that only amongst the Italians who look at the nude girls on the beach in Fort Lauderdale?
No, I think the seniors are happy every time they wake up, and the New York seniors have a very good attitude. They're happy they're still walking alive, I think, and they woke up. And
that they can vote in two states and get away with it. I'm sure they're happy, and all the benefits they get in two states helps, too.
I guess they are.
I mean, you can vote for Schumer and then go down there and vote for another New Yorker who's living in West Palm Beach and get a welfare check from New York and another one from Florida. Couldn't be better. The streets are paved with gold. Thanks for the call, 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Houston, Texas. Pablo, thank you. Welcome to the Savage Nation. You say something. The guy from Ethnic Studies made an implication about World War II in Mexico, and I didn't get it. Please tell us what he was saying.
Okay, if you only give me maybe 13 seconds because I'm a fast talker. Basically, Germany went to Mexico promising California, Nevada, Arizona, and Texas back. When Mexico got involved, that's the United States woke up and said, these Mexicans can probably do what the Palestinians are doing in Israel because of their distance, how close they are. Now, this explains the accordion. Ever wonder why Mexican music did not have the accordion pre-World War II, and now every song you hear is an accordion? Because the German polka left an accordion there, and that's why we're cursed with that instrument.
No, I know about the music. It's funny you brought it up because I was once going to do it, but I thought people would take me wrong. It sounded like bad German music to me, and it's unfortunate because there's great poetry in the Indian culture of Mexico. That is the true Mexico, by the way. I can never understand people who talk about La Raza with such pride, when in fact Spanish is the language of conquest. It's not even the language of the indigenous people. You know that, and I know that.
That is an absolute fact. If they really want to reach their roots, they need to stop speaking Spanish, because that's when we got conquered as a nation by the
Absolutely.
Spaniards.
I mean, I know this as a man trained in anthropology. The language of Mexico is truly probably either a Mayan dialect or an Aztec dialect or a mixture of both and some other Indian languages. But to wind up saying Spanish is the language of Mexico is almost absurd, in the sense that it is the language of the conquistadors, who are amongst the most horrendous conquerors that the world has ever known, of what they did to the peoples of South and Central America. And why they're trying to take it out on the American people who have been so kind to them, I'll never understand, other than weakness seems to invite anger and hatred.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, there's 8 different languages in Mexico today, in case you didn't know that.
I knew that there were 3, but I didn't know there were 8. Would you care to name them?
I am not that intellectual to know, but an illegal alien told me this. An illegal alien told me this. And so when I...
Well, the one language that they all speak is called the U.S. dollar. Dinero, I think, is the common language for all of us. That's something... that's the one language that we all have in common, just the language green. Thank you for the insightful call. Chicago, Mary from WIND. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes. I wanted to tell you, Dr. Savage, that I think your goal, where you took the courage to be interviewed by Playboy, your goal to reach another audience will be met, because through controversy comes curiosity. And I think people will tune into your station. I'm one of those that was curious, and when they'd say extreme views, well, if borders, language, culture, and free speech are extreme views, then I'm extreme.
Oh, bravo. Bravo to you, Mary. Let me send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. I haven't done this in a long time, but stay on the line. We'll get your name and address and send you a free book. That was beautifully put. If borders, language, culture, and free speech represent extremism, then I am an extremist. That's beautiful. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Some more headlines here. More men arrested in Times Square bomb investigation. Of course, when we say men, we know who they are. We know what their ethnic background and national backgrounds are. But the government won't leak it, because then you'll put two and two together. And unless they look at like Timothy McVeigh, you'll never see their picture. At least not with a little struggle from the media. And you know, the media doesn't want you to know that they don't look like Timothy McVeigh. Despite oil leak, public backs offshore drilling. Really? Afghan president pays respects at Arlington. Oh, what a PR stunt that is. Why does Karzai continue to wear that Boy Scout cap? I don't get it. What is that Cub Scout uniform? Oh, you know, that's so, like, third world outfitty. I mean, we know he's the president of a third world nation. Let's talk about Afghanistan for a minute, now that I got your attention. I'm glad I got your attention. Can anyone explain to me why are we in Afghanistan? Because I still don't know. Why are men dying? Why are men fighting? Why are men getting maimed? For whom? For whom the bell tolls, and why? Americans want us out of Afghanistan, incidentally. Now you say, oh, I'm shocked to hear that. We thought you were right wing. Don't you understand who I am yet? Don't you get who I am yet? Why are we in Afghanistan? I thought Obama was a peacenik. He comes to power and he increases the troop strength by 30,000. And to top it all off, in addition to increasing the war in Afghanistan, which we're not winning because of rules of disengagement, did you hear that they're actually giving medals for not fighting? Hold fire and earn a medal. You didn't hear this story. You're not going to believe it. You thought the rules of engagement under Bushki were bad. You're right. But U.S. troops in Afghanistan could soon be awarded a medal for not doing something. It would be given for courageous restraint, for holding fire to save civilian lives. I cannot believe what I'm looking at. It's as if they're saying American men are trigger happy and they go out of their way to kill civilians. You know that the enemy hides amongst their wives and children. You know that. So, this is shocking that we have a military that's been turned into such putty by the liberals. And I mean going back to the era of Bush. But not only are the rules of engagement prohibiting us from winning the war in Afghanistan, but to top it all off, Obama has blamed Israel for all the problems on the earth. If you actually study the arc of Obama's ascent to power and his current status and standing, he seems to imply if only Israel, if the Jews would only withdraw from Israel, peace would reign on earth. Well, let's take that theory unto itself. It's all about Israel and it's all about Palestine. That's why the Muslims are enraged around the world. That's what the liberals would like you to believe. Then please explain to me why the Muslims set off bombs inside Mumbai and killed so many people. Was that about Israel? No, it had nothing to do with Israel. It had to do with the Muslim extremists who want to take control of a contested piece of land that exists between India and Pakistan, as you well know. There are 13 major conflicts going on the globe, and strangely enough, in each case, it seems to be Muslims with a grievance against one of its neighbors. Nothing to do with Israel. And so the next time you hear an anti-Zionist, who is really an anti-Semite in disguise, say to you, if only the Jews would withdraw from the West Bank. They don't even know where the West Bank is. You've got to understand that they are nothing but naked Jew haters, even though most of them may be Jews themselves. That's because they're disconnected from their own religion, their own God. They have no religion. They have no God. They are humanists. They're not really Jewish. But let's go on to another subject, and that subject will be anything you want to talk about on the Savage Nation. Jack in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind, Jack?
Hello, Michael. I read the article online, the online version of the Playboy interview, and the attitude seemed to change as the interview went on, where at the beginning he was right after you, you know, nationalist, bigot, this, that. And then by the end of the article, he was hardly even there. He was kind of like wallpaper just in the background. So I was trying to figure out where it changed, and it was about the middle when you brought
it. You know, it's funny you should say it. Mrs. S. read the article, and she said it looks as though two people edited this piece, because she said there were two different mindsets in the interview. It's like two different interviews occurred.
Exactly, yeah. And I was trying to pinpoint where it happened, and it seemed right about the time when you said you went out with a Playboy playmate.
Oh, well, I don't know. There was 16 hours, he said. I didn't know it was that long. I thought it was 7 hours, but he said it was 16 hours. You're only reading 9 minutes of it, actually, if you read it. So what was said in the other hours is really the issue. What was left out of the article? I only wish that I had asked for the tapes as part of the agreement, and that I could play some of those tapes on the show. But all right, you know, what is. At the end of the day, do you feel it was a fair-minded portrayal of my views?
I thought it was a fair, you know, I thought it was a little off balance at the beginning, his, you know, kind of attack mode. But I think that they had to take that stance because it's Playboy, you know, it would have been.
Right. So do I. I think that they had to appease their base. The only question that remains is this: when the magazine finally comes out on Friday, and then, of course, it's world or nationwide on Monday, the 3D version, how many of the people are really going to buy it? Because they can't wait to get their hands on the magazine to hear what Michael Savage.
The interview's there, and a lot of people will read it. And because of his attack thing, you know, at the beginning, that kind of attitude, people will stay with it. If it's going to be a fluff.
How many people who read Playboy really read it for any of the content? They're not really buying it to look at the girls and the airbrushed girls that don't exist, that are not real, that have destroyed marriages since the magazine first came out by creating a fantasy about women that doesn't exist. There's no woman on earth who's an airbrushed woman. I mean, they're just like you and I, only they're women. You know what I'm saying? That's the hardest thing for men to understand who have grown up reading these stories. I only they have different body parts. But you know something, my friend? If you're looking for an airbrushed wife, you're going to wind up with nothing but heartache. That's the wisdom of the ages passed down to you for free right here on the Savage Nation. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Lo and behold, it's Playboy's latest centerfold.
Holy cow.
In 3D.
This is the beautiful naked body in three dimensions, jumping out of the page into your arms.
It looks very realistic. Like, I could just touch her.
Like, I'm in a strip club. Like, she's right in front of me about to dance.
The big news today continues to be Michael Savage on The Michael Savage Show. I mean, I could cover the news, which I certainly do every day, but the Playboy article has attracted a lot of attention. In fact, the most interesting attention was from a psychiatrist, and he is a friend of mine, but I hadn't heard from him for years. It's up on Michael Savage, and I want to read you some of it. Note from a Savage friend, Playboy article reviewed by a psychiatrist. Congratulations on taking the challenge of an interview by an obviously exploitive Playboy. Obvious in that they're using your ratings to lift their ratings. Huh. It seems they're shifting to media violence, an attack on an iconic figure, that's you, brother, as a successor to exploitation of good-looking, sexy women, which is no longer their exclusive gambit. Exploitation, either way, and mostly of the immature audience that buys into a view of the Playboy world through the lens of Playboy's cameras and journalists. But the main theme is obviously exploitation. At the top of the article, they have a little video of some of your previous appearances, and one was of you on CNN with Charles Barkley years ago. Obviously, they wanted a sporting match between you and Charles Barkley, and when you came out swinging after he insulted you, they had to cut you off and put you down. You won. I am puzzled, however, about the British government's unfair and illegal, in my opinion, invasion of your rights, without a hearing or an opportunity to be heard, other than by means of your own considerable popularity and the rebuttal power of your radio and literary podium. Again, Savage, you win, but only in the minds of people who have gotten beyond racism and into realism. I'm reading again from a letter from a psychiatrist friend about the Playboy article to Michael Savage. He continues, "Know thine enemy ought to be the first rule of survival in the modern world, just as it has always been. You are the sage voice of such common sense. Your error in the popular mind is that you also attempt to define the natural feelings that sane people have about enemies and the logical thoughts and actions that one takes, defensive and strategic. You voice these advanced but logical thoughts and are vilified and insulted for your candor. You are also misrepresented and slandered by those who fear your influence. Such people are indeed the enemy, both those who support Islamic fascism in the form of nihilistic imperialism, and such people within America, i.e. the enemy within. These are not just liberals, they are dreamers and risk all utopianists. They are not only nuts, they are also stupid. They are sowing the seeds of their own economic downfall and eventual physical enslavement, and threaten to take us all down with them. You know that, and you voice that message. But perhaps not clearly enough to get the laggards to wake up. I almost forgot." And he goes on to something else. "On the other hand, Michael, you are not backing off. Instead, you continue to do a phenomenal job and a courageous one of getting lackadaisical and somewhat grandiose Americans to think new thoughts. You have won many followers, and you have challenged even the Playboy crowd to pay attention to reality. Not an easy task, as you have so often noted." Also on MichaelSavage.com, "High school cancels Arizona trip, but going to communist China is okay. Liberalism is a mental disorder." On Capitol Hill, outrage plays to cameras as they roast one business group after another. From Israel National News, "Jewish donors outraged by sociopath Obama." They're actually describing Obama as a sociopath. They finally caught on. From the L.A. Times, "Obama may embrace a plan to reconcile with the Taliban." What? With the Afghan war already unpopular at home, many Americans are likely to be further dismayed at the thought of making amends with figures who killed U.S. troops, but not Obama. Speaking of Obama, "Professor chooses professor." That's Elena Kagan. "White House dodges reporters but won't let them near Kagan. It's all Obama speak all the time. No news conferences, thank you." On the bottom of Michael Savage, court sentences the loudmouth, dictator-loving Sean Penn to anger management class for the videotape kicking of a celebrity photographer. Ugh. Jewish group tells L.A. Pals that comparing Arizona to Nazis is wrong. Huh. Good for them. Then, of course, there are many, many other articles on MichaelSavage.com. And the most important one is the article and the book Healing Children Naturally. For those of you who have children or your grandparents who have grandchildren, this is the book I wrote, Sin Qua Non in Healing Children Naturally, A to Z Natural Approaches for Natural Complaints, available only on MichaelSavage.com. You're not interested in any of this. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
We've been talking about Playboy's interview with me, Michael Savage, but there are other issues out there. The problem of illegal immigration is not being dealt with at all. The mainstream media and this administration can see no difference between those who have come to our country legally and those who have broken our laws to enter the country illegally. Joining us now with her look at this is Brigitte Gabriel.
Hi, Michael. Good to be back with you again. We are facing two recent instances concerning immigration that, as a first-generation immigrant from Lebanon and as a terrorism expert, I have some up-close and personal experience and information that will help our listeners develop an informed opinion about our immigration policies that are threatening our national security. At issue are the recent immigration bill passed in Arizona and the American citizenship of the Times Square bomber Faisal Shahzad. Let me start with the immigration issue. Immigrants like me, who crossed oceans to come to this great nation and become a part of America's fabric, are watching what is happening in Arizona and are livid with the reaction of people in this country about the law that Arizona passed. At least the governor in Arizona, who passed this bill, had more guts and courage than most our elected body of officials sitting up on Capitol Hill and the White House have. I came to this country, Michael, 22 years ago. America is literally the dream that became my address. For those who have never heard me before, I come from Lebanon. I survived the war that tore Lebanon apart for 16 years. My 9/11 happened to me when Muslims blew up my home, bringing it down, burying me under the rubble, wounded in 1975. I ended up living in a bomb shelter underground for 7 years of my life between the age of 10 and 17, robbed of my youth. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have water and had very little food. To get some food, I would crawl out of our shelter and dig out dandelions and different vegetation because it was the only greenery we had. To get some water, I would crawl in a ditch under sniper's bullets to a nearby spring, where we siphoned the water using a pantyhose to catch all the dirt and the junk so we can drink the water. I lived a living hell, trying to survive one day at a time, dreaming of coming to America one day.
Well, how did you learn about the U.S.?
My only window to the world was a black and white television operated on a car battery. My father would watch the news, and if there was any charge left in the battery, I would watch The Love Boat or Dallas.
Ha ha.
I was so mesmerized by America that I was so determined to make it here one day. And I figured out that if I am going to make it to America and out of my miserable existence, I will need to speak English. I taught myself English sitting in my bomb shelter watching Dallas and writing subtitles on my hand in ink pen. Since we barely had water to drink, let alone to shower, we showered once a week. I built a big vocabulary on my arms. I heard the words in English and wrote them down on my arm and what they meant in Arabic. Sort of a crude Rosetta Stone, you may say, approach to learning a language. Immigrants like me are disgusted with illegal immigrations. Those of us who came here legally and do it by the book have to jump through hoops to earn the privilege of living in America and participating in this great democracy as citizens of this great nation. in order for me to become an American. I had to study a book about the history of our country, our founding fathers, our form of government, etc. I had to take a written test at the federal building about this history and be able to pass it. I not only took a written exam, but had to give an interview and ask questions as to why I wanted to become an American. I knew more about America's heritage and history than my natural-born American husband before I took my test.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take a medical test, blood tests, skin tests. I was poked with needles, tested by doctors to make sure I am, quote, safe as a new citizen. Every test I took was a great step closer to my dream of becoming an American citizen. I am offended when I hear people say, I'm an African American, I'm an Italian American, I'm a Lebanese American. I am nothing but an American. Those of us first-generation immigrants, the old-fashioned ones who do it legally and by the book, left our countries of birth and came here for a reason. If our countries were so hot, we wouldn't be here. Immigrants like me who played by the book came here to be all we can be in pursuit of the American dream. We not only wanted to accomplish, but we wanted to build and prosper. We not only work hard to provide for our families, but we build businesses, hire other Americans, pay taxes into the American tax system, and do our best to make America better for our children. First-generation immigrants who came here, whether Italians, Chinese, Lebanese, or Portuguese, wanted to speak English and teach their children English and make their kids speak English as their official language. We all wanted to be Americans in all sense of the word and speak the English language, the official language of the land. None of us expected to walk into Home Depot, for example, and see signs in our mother tongues like we see now in Spanish at Home Depot across the country. We resent illegal immigrants who come here and resent even more those who want to give them the same rights that people like me worked hard for years to earn. The difference between us and the illegals is they are criminals to start with. While we come here to create businesses and pay taxes, they come here to work menial jobs and send their money back to Mexico while sucking our life out and costing us billions of dollars per year.
Exactly.
There are plenty of ways for people seeking to come here legally. America has a lottery system where people from all over the world can apply and come here, and they do. People can do it by going through the legal process already in place. Michael, I did it the right way, the legal way. So can everyone else. Don't come to me crying about we need to accommodate non-English speaking people with driver tests and school classes in their native tongue. My native tongue is Arabic, then comes French, then English, then Hebrew. And you bleeding hearts out there, don't complain to me that we need to be the lifeboat of the world and take in every soul who wants to come here. We are a sovereign country last time I looked. Let's apply the law as written. The boat is full and fiscally sinking because of the debt inflicted, and I mean inflicted, upon us by illegal immigrants. Anybody who aids and abets illegal immigration is a traitor to our country and is contributing to the degradation of the hope and dream I legally aspired and worked to be a part of. And anyone who complains that they cannot understand English better get cracking on that Rosetta Stone or get out of here.
Why do you feel better border security is needed?
Because terrorists are working with the drug cartels, the MS-13 gang, in smuggling terrorists through the border. In my book titled Because They Hate, I discuss how Al-Qaeda is paying between $25,000 and $50,000 per terrorist to be smuggled through the border. The drug cartels have figured out a much more profitable way to make money. Forget about the little poor Mexicans who can pay diddly squat to come here. It is much more lucrative to work with terrorists. If a biological or chemical bomb was smuggled into the United States through the Mexican border, we have no one to blame but ourselves for burying our head in the sand and refusing to do something about it. The problem with terrorists coming through the border is so severe, our government has a politically correct name for them, OTM, other than Mexicans. They are coming here by the thousands. They are going directly to cities with large Islamic concentration, and they are marrying Muslim American women and becoming citizens themselves. A lot of the Muslim terrorists we have arrested in recent years who were involved in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, the 9/11 bombing, up to the latest Times Square bombing, were all naturalized citizens by marriage. Now, I got my citizenship through marriage also, but that was after dating a variety of men from different nationalities and then rejecting a string of marriage proposals over 2 years from my very determined now American husband who romanticized me into becoming his wife. We got married overseas and had our first baby overseas before we came here. The Arizona border issue is far greater than just an immigration issue, as big as that is.
Why is that?
At this point, it is a major threat to our national security. We could easily lose a major American city due to a biological bomb smuggled through the Mexican border by an OTM, other than Mexican, meaning a Muslim terrorist. I urge those of you who are fed up with political correctness to join us at actforamerica.org. Act for America is the largest national security grassroots movement in the United States. We are 80,000 members strong and 380 chapters nationwide. We are mobilizing citizens nationwide to stand up and be counted. We are mobilizing veterans in a national security movement nationwide. If you are a veteran, click on Veteran Defenders on the homepage of actforamerica.org and join us.
Brigitte, thanks for the report.
Michael, I easily relate to your constant theme of language, borders, and culture. I came to America believing in the unity of speaking English, with the hope that America's borders would protect me from those who wish me harm. Thank you for the opportunity to tell your listeners what an immigrant to this great nation feels about protecting our country.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now to talk about the recent Wall Street tribulations is Cliff Kincaid from Accuracy and Media.
I think most of the media and most of the policymakers are missing what is really happening and what was dramatically displayed when the market fell almost 1,000 points.
Well, what is that?
That is, there are some major forces at work, and we call them the hedge fund short sellers. And we believe these same people were involved in crashing the markets and causing the recession, the economic collapse back in 2008, paving the way for Barack Obama to win the presidency. And these people are out there. And we know who they are. It's no secret. These are the big hedge fund short sellers like George Soros, who has been betting on economic collapse and undermining national economies, even the global economy, for many years now. That's how he's made his billions of dollars. But also people like John Paulson, who made billions of dollars by betting on the housing market collapse in 2008. But there are many more people like this. These are the hedge fund short sellers. They are dealing with billions and billions of dollars. And you don't have to be a financial analyst or an economic expert to understand what they do. These people operate through a group called the Managed Funds Association, probably the most powerful special interest in Washington, D.C. And these are the people who can run down the market, run down the stock prices, undermine entire industries because they have access to the computerized trading schemes. And there are many more, some of them openly listed as members of the Managed Funds Association. These are the people who are not only playing with our economy and our homes and their values and prices and our stocks and our IRAs and our pensions, but they're playing with the futures of other nations and the world itself. And what we're seeing is simply unprecedented. But you're never going to get the truth from the so-called business media, the major media. Consider that after the almost 1,000-point collapse in the stock market, all of a sudden we were told that, oh, it was a fat finger somewhere pushing the wrong key on a computer. Or then we were told, when that didn't make any sense, that it may have been a cyber attack launched by some unnamed or anonymous adversary somewhere. No, it has nothing to do with any of that. These are the hedge fund short sellers. These are people who bet on the collapse of our economy. They make money when what we invest in goes down in value. We, meaning ordinary people, ordinary Americans. And they are really destroying the capitalistic system in the United States. And Michael, it's not just my opinion. I'm a journalist. I have gone to some of the experts. But you're not going to see these experts on CNBC or Fox Business Channel. I go to people like Zuby Diamond, who's written the book, The Wizards of Wall Street. An African immigrant came to the United States, became a success, made a lot of money, first in business, in the restaurant business, then got involved in investing and made a lot of money there. And he has filled me in. His book is excellent, The Wizards of Wall Street, about these short sellers, these people who undermine the system in order to profit from the suffering and misery of others. And I'm not overtly dramatizing this thing. I mean, we know it occurs. This is what the scandal of Goldman Sachs is all about. This is why the firm was indicted. They had put together a bundle of bad mortgages and were selling them to other investors. The mortgages themselves were put together with the assistance of John Paulson, the hedge fund short seller. So while they were selling these mortgages supposedly as a good deal to other people, Paulson and the people at Goldman Sachs were betting that the whole thing would collapse. In other words, it was a big scam. It was a big lie. It was a big deception. But this is how they work. The amazing thing about the indictment, though, that came from the SEC of Goldman Sachs is they let Paulson, the hedge fund short seller, the big billionaire, off the hook, even though he was a key component of the whole thing. So in the articles, Michael, I've written about this subject, I go into what's wrong with the system, how it has to be changed, and none of the regulations that are being proposed in the so-called financial reform bill being pushed by Obama and the Democrats on Capitol Hill will address this problem. It's all beside the point. They are not dealing with this threat.
Right.
And this threat, I repeat, is not only to our life savings, the values of our homes, and to our entire economic system, but to other countries. They played these kinds of games against Greece, and now we're seeing what's happening there. Yeah, the Greek government did spend too much or went too much into debt, but they became ripe pickings for the hedge fund short sellers, and now we're seeing the riots in the street and so on and so forth. And this is going to spread. And who's going to be the beneficiary of this whole thing throughout Europe when it starts going from country to country to country? The communists. Who's leading the protests, the riots in the streets in Greece? The communists. And when they have elections finally in countries like Greece, the communists are going to win. And this is how these predators, these hedge fund short sellers, are fomenting what I call in one of my pieces at AIM.org, a world revolution right in front of our eyes. And this is going to spread. And it's eventually going to come to the United States. We may have a few years left, but we had better act soon. And it's not just a matter of cutting our spending and cutting our debt. It's a matter of putting in the regulations that we need, a system of laws that govern the markets So these billionaires, these hedge fund short sellers, can't come in and undermine the system and make the little people, you and I, and or other ordinary investors pay, and they get rich in the process. It's wrong. And there are certain things that have to be done. I've gone into these regulations that have to be imposed, like restoring the uptick rule and trading curbs and so on and so forth. All of this is necessary, but it's not part of the financial reform so-called bill that's before Congress.
Why?
Because all of these key Democrats and Obama himself are in cahoots with the hedge fund short sellers. John Paulson, the guy who bet on the housing market collapse and made billions, was raising money for Christopher Dodd. Charles Schumer from New York was bringing these hedge fund short sellers together and telling them to work even more effectively and lobby better, and they have. They're spending millions and millions of dollars on Capitol Hill right now so they can escape whatever financial reform bill is eventually passed. But they are the culprits. This is really a form of legalized stealing is what's happening, and they are not just stealing from big investors, they're stealing from us. We're the ones who are suffering because our home values have gone down. We're the ones who suffer when the market goes down almost 1,000 points as it did on that one particular day. I mean, think about what happened on that particular day. You had one stock that was at $44 going down to 1 cent in a matter of 15 minutes, then going back up to $40. What's happening there? These are the short sellers. These are people who run down the prices and the values of the stocks, and they make money that way. They bet that it will go down. They run the price down. Then they buy in again on the long position in order to make money when it goes back up. So they're making money at both ends of the transactions. And who's losing in the process? Well, ordinary investors. Because ordinary investors, and I include myself, we're scared to death to invest in this market.
True.
And meanwhile, we get no real investigative reporting by any major media outlet into the activities of the Soroses, the John Paulsons, and the others who are part of this so-called, they call themselves the alternative investment community. That's the voice of the Managed Funds Association. And I'm telling you, that's where to look. That's where to spend some time on. If you don't get these people under control, the system will continue to deteriorate, not only here, but abroad in other countries, because the system has been undermined from within. These are not capitalists who are doing this to the system. These are predators. These are Zuby Diamond likes to talk about the difference between the good and the bad Wall Street. The good Wall Street are people, including big investors, who put money in companies and want to see them grow and want to see them produce goods and services. That's the system. That's what capitalism is. It's capital. But the bad Wall Street, that's the short hedge fund short sellers who are destroying the capital in capitalism. They're looting the system, and they're destroying countries and perhaps even the world economy in the process.
Cliff Kincaid, thanks for the report and for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks a million for having me on again.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Seems like everyone's talking about the new issue of Playboy.
Lo and behold, it's Playboy's latest centerfold.
Holy cow.
In 3D.
This is the beautiful naked body in three dimensions, jumping out of the page into your arm.
It looks very realistic. Like, I could just touch it.
Like, I'm in a strip club. Lady. She's right in front of me about to dance.
Strange that the left-wing media failed to mention Michael Savage.
Playboy's first ever 3D centerfold. What do you think?
Do you have a copy of Playgirl?
Sorry, no male centerfold for gay readers.
Go figure. Michael Savage Playboy interview. So before he writes about the interview, there's a whole page about the article and about me. And then Hockman says these nasty things. He says, most of the time I hated him. I don't think that this writer, whatever his name is, David Hockman, will ever live down what he said in this article. I believe that this man is going to regret that he ever said that he hated me for the rest of his life. I believe that his own mother would find that offensive, frankly. And I don't know of, I've never read, by the way, an interview in my entire life of anyone where the interviewer said most of the time I hated him. I've seen interviews from some mass, about mass murderers. I've seen Dan Rather's interview with Saddam Hussein, a noted mass murderer. Did Dan Rather say I hated Saddam Hussein once? I've seen interviews with Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time. The man who kills homosexuals, a man who kills women, a man who kills political dissidents. Has anyone ever said I hated him? No, the liberals seem to love him. And yet they hated me. Now, what does that tell you about them? What does that tell you about liberals in the media? So you could say, well, look, you got what you deserve. You knew he was a liberal. Why'd you do it? I'll tell you why I did it. I'll give you two answers. One, because I was treated, I think, roundly and fairly by a real writer who was really more like a poet than a journalist in The New Yorker. I mean, you know, the man who wrote that interview with me last year in The New Yorker was a real writer. And he didn't come into it with a political bias, so far as I know. I'm sure he's a liberal. He was a music critic for The New York Times. But the man understood art, and he understood the difference between mere rhetoric and real art. And that's why he wanted to interview me. He knew I was an artist. This guy doesn't know the difference between an artist, a polemicist, a poet, a pauper, and a shrimp. Moreover, he doesn't understand what he just did by saying most of the time I hated him. He hated me? He didn't know me. He sat with me for 3 hours and he hated me? How could he hate me? What did I do that made him hate me? He hated my ideas, but he didn't know the difference between a man and his ideas? And this just shows you the trouble we are in America. Do you understand this?
From Ipanema goes walking and she passes,
back in the world of politics, Obama Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan is making the rounds of the senators and kissing their rings. Here she is with Dianne Feinstein.
This is not very animated. I hope you understand.
It's the end of a long day. Yeah,
for me, too. For you.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
How's the day gone? Everybody's been very gracious.
Oh, boy, listen to that laugh. Wow, as bad as Pelosi. And here she is with the Republican undertaker, Orrin Hatch.
You're going to get mad. There's the man of the year from the American Rifle, National Rifle Association. So it's a piece of art, really.
It's beautiful.
It's a handmade flintlock, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, my God, we're doomed. And we found out today that Arizona passed a law banning ethnic studies classes. Hurrah! Here's a left-wing revolutionary teacher who appears on CNN and opposes the ban.
The nation needs to understand that the political discourse within this law is based upon a racist witch hunt that has been used for political gain. Let's start right there. The next thing is this legislation is based upon lies, untruth and lies. The reality of the situation is what we teach in those courses is the state standards. To those state standards, we apply a Mexican-American lens, a historical lens from the Mexican-American perspective on those events.
What a wonderful man.
Nick Clegg and I are both political leaders who want to put aside party differences and work hard for the common good and for the national interest. I believe that is the best way to get the strong government that we need, decisive government that we need today.
There is another article that is up on Michael Savage that is worth quoting in part, which is from a man I never met, Michael Werbowski, from the Digital Journal blog, posted Lyft travel ban on Michael Savage. Permit me to bring to your attention an issue which deals with freedom of speech and expression, of which all those in the media, including citizen reporters, follow closely. This brings me to the heart of the matter that I wish to raise with you. And this is addressed to the new UK Prime Minister. The travel ban imposed on the so-called controversial conservative American talk show host, Michael Savage, by the previous Labour government of Gordon Brown. Dr. Savage is, for those who are still unfamiliar with this man, a well-known radio show host in the United States, a freedom-loving nation which still enjoys, supposedly, a special relationship with your own country. During its tenure, the Labour government has denied Dr. Savage the right to travel to the UK, a land known worldwide to be a harbor and haven of toleration towards opposing views and thoughts, on very dubious grounds and for pernicious reasons. It is my view, and maybe yours as well, that such McCarthyist-like tactics, such as travel bans or blacklists, seek only to silence and intimidate those who are outspoken and whose views we might disagree with, however contrary they may be to our own beliefs and opinions, and in the process diminish our entitlement to free speech. And he goes on. And he says, Savage is somewhat provocative in your face on air comments, along with his caustic and insightful wit, is perhaps often misrepresented as being excessively rude or even branded as hate speech. This is outlandish balderdash, he writes. Dr. Savage believes in three precepts which makes every nation functional. These are borders, language, and culture. Surely one cannot object to these principles. He concludes, I am sure you, as the new Prime Minister of a great country where democratic freedoms were born, will agree to protecting the UK's borders, its English language, and its historic and cultural heritage. That is why I urge you, as leader of the New Britain, to seriously consider lifting the unjust ban on Michael Savage, which is still preventing him from traveling to the British Isles and also from meeting and talking with like-minded Brits. Sincerely, Michael Wabowski with Digital Journal. These great articles can be seen on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.